This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is our pleasure to have Amber Lehman and Mary O'Shea with us on the program this week. Amber is CEO of First Choice Pregnancy Solutions in Wake Forest, North Carolina, and Mary is currently the organization's program manager and has been serving as a registered nurse in North Carolina for 20 years. The mission of First Choice Pregnancy Solutions is to communicate accurate and truthful information to men and women affected by unplanned pregnancy and to provide them with spiritual, emotional, and physical support. Amber and Mary are with us to discuss the importance of increased waiting periods for abortion procedures and why these waiting periods are a crucial part of ensuring that women facing unplanned pregnancies are fully informed before they make life-altering decisions for themselves and their unborn children. We are particularly grateful that both Amber and Mary recently testified at a hearing at the North Carolina General Assembly in favor of House Bill 465, a bill that would increase the informed consent waiting period for abortion in North Carolina from 24 to 72 hours. Fortunately, this bill passed the House and is now awaiting action in the North Carolina Senate. Amber and Mary bring different perspectives to this issue, and we are looking forward to talking with them both about why North Carolina needs a longer waiting period for abortion. Amber and Mary, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having us.
Again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules, not only to be with us today on the program, but also to come down to the legislature a few weeks ago and testify on your experience about the importance of legislation like House Bill 465. Now, Amber, you've been on the show before, and you have shared graciously your own personal experience with unplanned pregnancy and abortion. I'd love it if you would just take a few minutes to share your story with us again for the benefit of our listeners, because you really understand what abortion-minded women are going through when they're facing the difficult decisions related to a crisis pregnancy.
Sure thing, John. I was 15 years old when I found out I was pregnant. I took a pregnancy test at my brother's house, and he took me to tell my mom. My family was supportive, whatever I wanted to decide. And living with a struggling single mom, I saw abortion really as my only option. And a few weeks after my 16th birthday, my mother dropped me off at the abortion clinic because she had to go to work. And my boyfriend's mom picked up my prescriptions and dropped me off at home. And I really went through the decision-making and the procedure alone. And honestly, John, I had no idea what I was doing. I just walked through the abortion clinic doors with my emotions shut down, doing what I had to do. And much of that day is a foggy memory, but I do remember signing in, and the extent of the education I got was a question like, you realize you could choose parenting or adoption, right? And then in the back, I was walked through a pamphlet of the procedure, maybe fetal development information, I don't remember, and then I was walked into the procedure room. And I don't remember much of that day, and honestly, I think that is how women survive their abortion day. There's a bit of a shutting down and going through what you have to do, or what you feel like you have to do.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Amber, how long were you given to think about your decision to have an abortion? And looking back, do you think that a waiting period requirement would have made a difference in your decision?
Well, I think I can imagine an alternate day that I would have walked in and been walked through information and sent home with educational materials for me to review, maybe with my mother as a minor. You know, a 72-hour waiting time where I could have left that fog of being shut down behind and go and think about it once I had the information. And I know some women have researched it well before they walk through those doors, but many haven't, and they haven't when they come through our doors. And, you know, I think if I had been given full education as well as an understanding of what resources were available to me, that I quite possibly would have chosen something different.
Mary, as a nurse at First Choice Pregnancy Solutions, you work very closely with hundreds of young women who are facing unplanned pregnancies. And something that you emphasized in your testimony before the House committee is that women facing an unplanned pregnancy are really in crisis. Will you talk a little bit more about this for us, what your experiences have been, and explain how this can impact the decisions that they ultimately make?
Well, I think the difference between an unplanned pregnancy and a planned pregnancy are pretty vast. Our clients, we ask them, were you trying to get pregnant? The answer is no. We ask them, were you using birth control? The answer is no. They don't have a full understanding of the consequences of unprotected sex, that sex can lead to pregnancy, or it just isn't important to them in that moment. And so once they find out, they're really shocked, and that seems strange to us. Of course, we know that can happen. They may know it too, but they're shocked that it's happened to them. And they want it to stop. They want it over. They want it done as quickly as possible. They want to make a decision so that the pressure of the crisis is off. And that's normal behavior that we see in many different types of crisis that we observe here, whether it's a bad weather storm in North Carolina and your power goes out, or, you know, whatever it is, that's the crisis in the moment. We want it over. We want to get back to that feeling of normal.
So it would seem that considering that factor, time really is a key part of ensuring that women in these crisis pregnancy situations have not only the information, but the time necessary to make a fully informed decision. Would you all agree with that?
I absolutely agree.
I think any decision made in a hurry risks decisional regret, and an abortion is a decision you can't take back.
Absolutely. Well, Mary, I was really struck by another point that you made during your testimony on House Bill 465 when you talked about how the abortion procedure compares to other medical procedures, even dental procedures, when it comes to a period of reflection. How long do patients typically get with other medical procedures, and what is the process there, and how does the abortion procedure compare with those things?
I'm really surprised to see how quickly they walk through the process of abortion once they present as a provider. Right now, they're able to read the educational information online and present it to the provider on another day and have a procedure done once they walk in the door. I cannot think of another elective medical procedure that is done the same day that you present to a provider. That's only done in situations of emergency and, I mean, trauma, urgent needs that would present to an emergency room generally. So it really surprises me that there's not an initial interview with a provider and an assessment by a provider, and then time to go and review information that the provider has given, their own research and information, and then come back and have a procedure. It's the only procedure I can think of, and I've consented a lot of patients for procedures.
Clearly, when we talk about this industry, we're talking about what many consider to be a very, well, a highly volatile and very political issue. And on the kind of the political front, what we've seen in the legislature, even as it relates to this piece of legislation that you both testified on, is that abortion proponents argue that waiting periods like this are unnecessary, that they are demeaning to women and actually would threaten women's health. Amber, what is your response to these claims? And how do you believe abortion waiting periods will help women facing unplanned pregnancies in North Carolina?
Yeah, I understand their point, but they're making the wrong assumption that women are actually making an informed decision before that 72-hour wait period would take effect. Most of the women that we serve are very undereducated about their bodies, the development of their pregnancy, the abortion procedures and risks, and especially the resources available to them if they desire to choose something other than abortion. When women come to us, we walk them through that in a very non-confrontational, non-judgmental way. And when they leave, they're thanking us and hugging us, and many times they'll call to let us know what they did, even if they had the abortion, and thank us for being there for them in such a difficult time. So I don't actually think women feel demeaned when they are taking the time. In fact, I would say that that they're more empowered. Getting out of the pregnancy is not the only way to alleviate the crisis in that time. Time alleviates crisis. When you can wrap your mind around something, when you can get the education, when you can talk through it with somebody, that is very empowering to women. That's not demeaning to women. It's giving them safety in their decision. Even if they go through with the abortion, they're going to have less regret if they are fully informed and know the consequences of their decisions. And if she comes in for a consultation at the abortion clinic and gets that information, and they send her home for 72 hours, that is not stopping her life. And she can still go back, and she's going to be able to go through with the procedure if she wants to. But when women are in crisis, they're moving quickly. And when they can have a forced pause where they have to, you know, I just need to pause and think about this. And it's not so much that they'll change their mind in that 72 hours, but they will be more empowered with that time.
Well, I think that's important. And we've talked a lot about the crisis situation with an unplanned pregnancy. One of the factors related to that crisis in some cases is the role of coercion in abortion. And this question would be for either you, Mary, or Amber. I know that many women facing unplanned pregnancies can be pressured by others, maybe a boyfriend or a parent, to get an abortion. Based on your experience working with women facing unplanned pregnancies, how might a longer waiting period help these women make, again, an informed decision about abortion and also potentially avoid being coerced into having an abortion and making a hasty decision that they may later regret?
We have to think about, you know, if she's in crisis, so is the baby's father, so is her mother, so is everybody's going to be moving quickly. And I'll say that when we have them and we do the, you know, we do a pregnancy test, we do an ultrasound, the ultrasound's going to tell us how long she has before the procedure and risk change. And it's amazing to see the demeanor of a woman change when she is told that she has, she's X amount of weeks pregnant and that she has 3 or 4 or 5 weeks to really make the decision before she goes through with the procedure. She doesn't realize she has time. And time is on our side when we're dealing with a crisis. It takes 6 weeks to psychologically adjust to a new normal after a major life crisis. And I'm not saying women should wait 6 weeks to make a decision, but I'm saying that if she has time, then she should take it so that she can level off her emotions and make a fully informed and empowered decision. Remember that she's the only one who will lay her head down every night after this decision is made, and she has to make sure that it's right for her. And the pressures from family and friends and the fathers of the baby are enormous. I'd say it's rare that we see a woman who doesn't have at least one person in her life pressuring her towards an abortion. And if they aren't pressuring, then they're being passive and leaving her alone. And rarely do we see somebody saying, if you want to have the baby, I believe you can do it and we'll be there for you and you're going to be a great mom.
One of the things that really occurred to me, and I love how God just brings new things to your mind as you're processing through something, is how much of this fight that healthcare is a right, not a privilege, and good healthcare is a right, and informed consent is a right.
Yes.
And, you know, that is what women need, and that's what this gives them an opportunity to have. And so I absolutely agree with Amber about it being the way to empower and equip women, and not to be, it's not demeaning in any way. It's not taking away any choice from them.
I think that speaks to why your ministry and your service is so important. I find it hard to believe, but Amber and Mary, unfortunately, we're just about out of time for this week's show. But I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can learn more about First Choice Pregnancy Solutions and the great work that you all do.
Yeah, our website is www.firstchoicenc.org. And that's first spelled out, choice, and then the letters for our great state of North Carolina, nc.org.
Let me repeat that one more time. It's www.firstchoicenc.org. And I definitely want to encourage our listeners to visit the website for First Choice Pregnancy Solutions and other crisis pregnancy centers across the state to learn more about their incredibly valuable work. Amber and Mary, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to be with us on Family Policy Matters. And just thank you so much for all that you do every day to help protect women who are facing these crisis situations and to save unborn children in North Carolina.
Thanks for having us, John, and thank you for all you do at the Family Policy Council.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.